Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show. Hi everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats. With me, your host Amanda Thebe, I have on the show with me today Steph Goodrow, who has just authored a new book, which is due out in July. It's called The Core Four. I am really excited to have Steph on the show. I've been following her work for a long time. She's been doing this forever, it seems. Since 2011, Steph has been impacting the lives of thousands of women through her fierce love approach to strength and badassery, which is a word I really struggle with, I might add. I always say, you want to say badassery, and we can assery. Doesn't sound as impactful, does it, Steph? Today on the show, we're going to talk about the core four. Welcome to the show, Steph. I'm really happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
One of the really great things that I love is that you, when you emphasize what results are for your clients, and when you talk about the book about what results women see, the health results, you talk about things like muscle definition, body confidence, restful sleep, and joy. And that gives me joy just reading that, because you're not saying, I can get you in a bikini. You know, I can have you looking like this. And it's like, stop with the bullshit. Let's just tell it like it is. This is what women want. Mm-hmm. So what made you write this book? Because you've written other books, you talk about this often. Why did you feel like it was necessary to bring things back down to the four core elements, which we'll just discuss in the podcast today?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I created this program that the book is based on in 2015 as a way to continue to bring these topics to my community, because although I started from a nutrition perspective, I started to very quickly see with my clients, people that were joining my community, that they really needed a back to basics approach, as you mentioned earlier, that would cover these really fundamental areas of health and wellness, because sometimes there's a tendency to focus so hard on one area, and it's usually the area we feel pretty proficient at, because who wants to do things that they don't feel proficient at?
That's right.
And I was seeing a lot of, you know, stressing out about getting the exact, you know, oh, we're going to keep dialing in our carbs, and like, you know, women have been dialing in their top carbs for years, and yet there are all of these other areas where they can move the needle quite a bit in terms of how they feel with health and wellness by addressing some of the stuff in these other areas. Not that we're going to do it perfectly, not that we're going to do it all, not that we're going to do it equally on every day of the week, but are there just opportunities to look beyond that? And I started that program in 2015. And as I continued to work with women in my community and really understand how women have been impacted hard by decades of dieting and decades of trying to fit into a specific look or think they have to be a certain way, I realized that I have a vision for what the world could look like for women to embrace themselves, respect their bodies, realize they're so powerful, take up more space. I mean, just be these just to be the people that they could be if they just get out of their own way. And I realized that I can't do that alone. And I really need to bring people into this fold. I need to bring women into this conversation. We need to build this from the ground up. This needs to be a movement. And the way to get that information into more people's hands is to try a multitude of different things like a podcast and a website and a book and just try to hit that in as many different ways as possible and get the information into people's hands, because this is going to take a community to make this happen.
I know it's quite interesting because the type of approach you have mirrors some, you know, the way my philosophy is as well. And it's just not the sexy way to do things. Like, I'm not going to make you feel starving, hungry, and I'm not going to only make you eat these foods, and you're not going to see really quick results. And that doesn't sell. It's the anti-diet mentality that we really want women to embrace for longevity and health, the resiliency, all of those things that are important to make women formidable, especially my listeners who are aging and need to live long lives. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to sort of sell this concept. And this is why I like the book. I really like that you've broke it down into four elements that are sort of like nice, easy chunks to understand, but with tangible actions for each area. So should we start with them then, the core four? So let's start with number one, which is you're eating your nourishing foods.
Yes.
What does that look like?
It's going to look different for everybody. And I think you hit on something really important, which is this is not your typical, it's not a diet book in that sense. And looking at nutrition women again have been on this diet train for so long, like we don't even realize how to fuel ourselves and how to eat the foods that make us feel the best, that give us energy. Because it's all been boiled down to just calories in and calories out. And yes, energy intake matters. And I don't want to gloss that over or say it doesn't matter, because we need to be mindful of that. But really looking for opportunities to think about the what that we eat, how we eat it, and sort of the why. And consider all of those three things. I take a really holistic approach to everything that I do. Mm-hmm. And so I set out a framework in the book that sort of gives these, we've kind of like tiered it out into saying, like, if we can put these things on our plate a majority of the time, we're going to be doing a really great job in terms of providing, you know, good macronutrient ratios, good micronutrition, incorporating perhaps some really healing foods and traditional foods from the perspective of addition. And I know this is going to break people's brains a little bit, because when we think about nutrition, it's always about taking things away.
Yep.
And we know that, yes, I mean, if we're eating foods that don't make us feel great, eventually if we can sort of minimize those foods, again, I don't think we need to eat perfectly to live a long and healthy and enjoyable life and have good health. But if we can, you know, prioritize some of the foods that are going to help us stabilize blood sugar, help our digestion, give us, you know, enough fiber and energy and all the things we know go into that, we eventually want to sort of crowd out the foods that aren't making us feel as good. However, when you approach nutrition with somebody and you say, hey, okay, Amanda, we're going to start this thing, and you've got to cut out this, 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 and this, all the things you really like.
Yeah, all the good stuff that we think is good, yeah.
Yeah, the first thing that happens is that your defenses go up and you're like, I'm not doing that. So my approach is really to encourage addition before subtraction. And yes, eventually we hope that we'll crowd out some of the other foods as we start to realize, hey, my energy is so much better. I'm not feeling the same kind of digestive problems. You know, what are some of the other things that I could be noticing in my body? Like, my joints don't hurt as much. But looking at it from that perspective and not just saying, okay, we're just going to have a big list of yes and no foods, because the foods that work for you could be different from the foods that work for me. And we really want to honor that bio-individuality. So there's a framework of suggestion in the book, but it is open to interpretation and it is flexible. And, you know, trying to avoid the use of the terms sort of like good and bad as much as possible when we're talking about food, because there's a lot of morality wrapped up in food and a lot of guilt and shame. And you just have to walk through a grocery store to see all the guilt-free labels and that sort of stuff. And we're so mixed up with all of that. So I really am just trying to provide a gentle framework and in a way of looking at food that's a bit more neutral and thinking about it in terms of how it makes us feel.
And then you know, we live in a society where obviously diet culture makes a lot of money and it's a massive industry. Mm. And women and men, but there's mainly women listen to the show, are super confused. And, you know, their friend Julie is on keto and she's lost all this weight, and somebody else is intermittent fasting and feels fantastic about it. So they're drawn to those people because of their like success and those experiences, but they don't usually realize that they're going down the same path as every other diet that they've tried, because the minute you start doing restrictions of either time or whole food groups or anything that puts your body under some type of stress load, isn't going to have a good outcome eventually, right? So how do you like cope with those questions, because you must see them all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm trying keto, it's awesome, it's the only thing that works for me. Like how do you deal with those type of responses?
Yeah, it's so hard. I'm constantly walking this line between, I'm a nutritional therapy consultant. I have a degree in biology and human physiology. Like, I understand how food impacts the body, how nutrition works. And I can, you know, just like any other person who teaches nutrition, we can make generalizations about, you know, big sweeping brush strokes about what really works for people. And yet there's always going to be some amount of individuality to that. So it's hard to say like keto is great for everyone. It's not. You know, intermittent fasting is great for everybody. It's not. There are so many things that we need to be aware of. And so I'm always walking this line between, I understand that there are valid approaches to nutrition in a lot of ways. However, I also see that a lot of the popular things especially are being misused, or it's a mismatch, Amanda, between the person and the lifestyle they live and the outcome that they want to see. And so it's not to say necessarily that some of these things are bad approaches for the short term. I really wish people would, especially with things like keto. I mean, keto was created as a clinical intervention for people who were really needed specific medical attention moderated through diet. So for example, epilepsy and certain types of cancers. I mean, these are like real deal clinical nutritional interventions. And while there is value, I think, in examining things and trying some things for a short period of time, unfortunately, because of the way our culture is set up, it's easy to take these things way too far or have them just really not work for us. So I would really love to see that if people truly want to do a keto approach because their blood sugar is really not being managed well, or, you know, for whatever reason, that they work with somebody who can really guide them. So oftentimes there could be some validity to some of these approaches. Another example would be the autoimmune protocol for reducing inflammation and managing autoimmune conditions. But again, those things aren't meant to be long-term things where we're just eating the most restrictive diet possible forever. And the mismatch between the tool, nutritional tool or the nutritional protocol, and the person, I see so much where it's like we're already living a high stress life. We are pushing ourselves really hard. We tend to be driven. These, you know, women who are doing these things tend to be really driven, a little bit on the type A spectrum, a little bit frantic about wanting to fix things. And this is not a judgment, this is just my observation. A little bit exercising perhaps a little bit much or a little bit intensely, and adding the nutritional things on top of it. Sleep is a little bit, you know, patchy. And so we get all these stressors on top of each other, on top of each other. And a lot of these protocols don't have a lot of good clinical data on them in women, especially who are in their reproductive years, whether that's their just full on regular menstruating or they haven't entered into perimenopause. We don't have a lot of good data on how these things affect women, particularly women who are still not in menopause. And so we often see that for women, this can be a huge mismatch, particularly on the carbohydrate intake side, long-term, because we end up with thyroid impact, hormonal disarray. I mean, adrenal stress, there's all sorts of stuff that can go along with that. So it's not necessarily to say that these tools are bad in and of themselves, but we're often adding stress on top of stress on top of stress.
Yeah, like for that, I think you hit the nail on the head for me. I mean, and I've lived through this personally as well. Like your whole hormonal landscape shifts through perimenopause, somewhat calming down, you know, into menopause. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that now with my fingers crossed, but you know, I saw like just changes in my body that I didn't recognize, didn't enjoy, and so like the knee-jerk reaction of me, and I've been doing this like forever, was like, what am I going to do to get rid of like this bloating, this exhausted feeling? And so women want quick answers, especially those who are like in the exercise industry as well, because they just say we're type A's and we just want answers, and nothing we've previously done has worked. And like personally, from my experience, I actually didn't try keto or intermittent fasting purely because I just couldn't eat that much butter, and it's like literally my favorite food group, but I still couldn't eat. No, I'm just joking. It just didn't appeal to me at all. And I'm very happy with my, like the diet I was eating, but something needed to shift, and literally bringing it back down to the basics worked. It really was just a case of reminding myself how important protein was.
Yeah.
Reminding myself how important carbohydrates are for a good hormonal health, and to stop fearing carbs, and to actually explain to women again what a carbohydrate is, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the difference between a Snickers bar and a piece of broccoli, they're all carbohydrates, yet they've been we've demonized the word carbs, and it's so distressing for me to honestly continue to have the conversation. Really? Yeah, you still hate carbs. Mm-hmm. Really, we're still having that. So your approach to nutrition in this book does do that, doesn't it? It brings it back to basics, and it reminds like the people reading this what the macronutrients are to start with, right? Like how important it is to like just focus on big picture. You're going to eat food, so it should look like this, right? You should sort of have these foods in your meal when you eat. Sort of the approach you've got, isn't it, in the book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about understanding, you know. And I used to be a high school science teacher, so this is kind of in my wheelhouse, but you have to, there has to be some kind of rationale in, I believe, there has to be, I had to provide some of the why, right? I had to provide the basics so that we're on a level playing field, and that in terms of information, and you can go out in the world once you have that and understand very clearly what you're looking at, so that you understand that yes, fruits and vegetables are primarily carbohydrates. However, equating an apple to a candy bar, we're missing context for XYZ reason, right? An apple is going to have the micronutrition, the phytonutrients, the fiber, the even just the water in it.
Water, yeah.
So many of us are eating dehydrated foods, and we're chronically just dehydrated. So really helping people to understand how to just take it back to basics. We're all going to calm down a little bit. And because there is this, we're in this cultural zeitgeist of swinging, the pendulum is swinging so from one extreme to the other. And, you know, we came out, I grew up in the 80s. I mean, it was all low carb or low fat, right?
Yeah.
So we came out of the low fat craze, and everybody was like, okay, like we're not going to be freaked out about fat anymore, but now it's carbs. And instead of, you know, I think the tendency for us humans, like we love new shiny things. We get bored really easily. We want, you know, constantly to be stimulated. And so it's very attractive and alluring. And we get this like anticipation, dopamine, like, ooh, this is going to be so exciting and great, by saying if a little is good, then wow, we're going to just go all in and it's going to be even better. And I don't care, as a nutrition consultant and a strength coach, I don't care what you can do for a week perfectly. And I don't care if you can eliminate all carbs for a week and you're like, I did it, because for most people that's not sustainable. And so then they fall off and they beat themselves up. And then, all right, we get into this cycle of restriction and shame and all of these things that occur. Instead, what if we were 10 or 20 or 50% more consistent, right? Like, or what if we were 10 or 20 or 50% more mindful, or we just gave a little bit more effort and we didn't have to be perfect and it didn't have to be all carbs out or all fats out. Like we find this balance, kind of middle ground. you know, and there are individual variations. Some people run a little bit better on a little bit more fat, and some people run a little bit better on a little bit more carbs, and kind of finding that unique balance, I think, is not as hard as people make it out to be. It's like we're overcomplicating everything.
That's exactly what I wanted you to say, because yeah. The fact is that people who are selling things, I often think, thrive on fear. Like, they want you to be scared to eat something so that you'll try, you know, their way. And that's that I hate that. I feel like they're preying on vulnerable women, especially, who just really want help. You know, they feel desperate and that drives me crazy. And so I really love the approach of like creating choice and autonomy, because that's basically what will help us thrive, you know, making us actually be allowed to pick what we want to do and giving us permission to do that. Ridiculous that we need that. But
that's the thing, is that people in coming from an education background, this is like well documented in educational research, at least, is the thing that motivates students, and I'll just substitute the word people, the thing that motivates people the most is not negative reinforcement, which is punishment. It's not positive reinforcement, which is reward. It's building things like autonomy and choice. And those are the real things that cause the most, quote, motivation over time. Those are the things that really build the most competence. It's not punishment reward. And yes, those things can be nice the reward at least can be nice in the short term, but
it's definitely a short term strategy for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so great. Like, I mean, I just think that constantly needs to be fed to people, to say, this is actually something you can do. You can have choice and it's great. And this is what's going to sustain you long term. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll move on now, because I could spend ages talking about something. Moving with intention, a big thing of mine, of course, like, because I'm a strength coach, I really, really love your approach to this. It has to be fun, has to be simple, it has to be effective, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're looking for. You're giving a prescription to people that actually is easy to integrate into their life, that really doesn't require too much thinking, which I think is really important when it comes to exercise for a lot of people.
Yep.
What's your approach to generally like exercise and how you advise people to move?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most important thing I tell people is to pick something that you like doing, because then you'll actually keep doing it.
Yeah.
So that's one. Number two, I really wish that women would give strength training a fair shot. I don't, right? And I'm preaching to the choir here. If somebody tries it and gives it an honest go and they think it's not for me, then great. Like, I would rather that you pick something that you can, that you will do. However, we know that especially for women, and especially once we hit 30, right, we start to lose muscle mass every decade. You know, we lose a certain percentage of muscle mass slowly over time. We increase our risk for osteopenia and osteoporosis, sarcopenia and dyspnea. There are all these things that we, just as a natural part of the aging process, we start to experience, and we can counteract that with strength training. Not only that, it's so great for your mind. I mean, wow, again, preaching to the choir, like, it is so powerful to approach something that you were probably told, or you absorbed the belief that you couldn't do these things, that they're not for you. They're not meant for women. Women can't be strong. And then you do that, you deadlift like your body weight, and you think, oh my gosh, like, I just did that. Also, what else can I do with my life?
Literally,
this is amazing.
Now, what's next? Yeah. World domination? Yeah. So I think I'm capable. That's exactly how it makes you feel, right?
Yeah, for sure. I would rather that people give it a fair shot. And if they just really don't love it, then do what you're going to do. But try to include some kind of resistance training, only doing cardio with the absence of strength training long term is not great for our bodies for those reasons. Like, I'm not anti-cardio. I think we can get a great benefit if we do more of a HIIT style training, depending on our, you know, our life and our stress levels and all those other things we already talked about. But, you know, I'd rather see that, if you get to a specific day and you think, gosh, like, I'm so busy, I can't head to the gym. Like, have something at your house you can do. I oftentimes work out on my front porch. I have four kettlebells. Like, it's not sexy or complicated. I'll just do a workout with that. Or instead of saying, scrapping the whole day and saying, well, screw it, I'm not doing anything, can you just go for a walk? I mean, I think we've created this idea that everything has to be done in the most expensive, complex gym situation, and that's the only fitness that counts. And just getting moving, getting active throughout your day, I talk about that in the book, and just sort of increasing your movement throughout the day, how much better that makes our bodies feel. We don't get stiff and sore and our backs don't hurt, and that these are all great ways to just move more with intention and incorporate, you know, again, strength training in the mix. But there are two levels in the book where I've got some dumbbell workouts that you can certainly do at home. And then if you are somebody who's more of a kind of a regular gym goer, there's some barbell work in there. But 2-3 days a week is all you really need with that stuff to make a huge impact.
Yeah. And especially with perimenopausal women, like that lack of that loss of estrogen really impacts the sarcopenia and osteoporosis. Like, you are now a candidate for osteoporosis. As soon as estrogen protects our bones, and so it's more important than ever to make sure that we sort of create that stimulus so that we stay strong. And the stats now on osteoporosis in women are shocking. 1 in 2 women over the age of 50 will suffer from osteoporosis. 40,000 a year now will die as a result of a broken hip. Ugh. That's crazy. Like, that's large numbers, and that can inherently be helped by doing some strength training. And I'm the same. Like, you may not like it, but have you really, really tried? And, you know, a good place to start can be body weight stuff. Mm-hmm. It can have enough stimulus to start with, and maybe it might interest you and excite you to try something new later down the road, right? It's not, yes. I like the way that you keep it not complicated. And I think that that's really important as well, because it can, most women who never strength trained, the idea of walking into a gym is more overwhelming than we can imagine. I mean, we've always done it, right? So we don't feel that, but we know that walking in can induce anxiety and fear, and the self-esteem can go down. So I like the at-home dumbbell workouts as well, because at least that's something they can do and try and just feel a success with, right? Feel like they're getting a small win.
For sure. And builds that confidence over time. But it really comes from doing the thing, and then you realize, okay, I didn't die. I'm okay. The world didn't stop. I'm still here. And if you're doing it at home, great. And then if you want to keep doing it at home, wonderful. I mean, I like to have that option and just have it there for me on days where I can't get to the gym. And I like to get out of the house because I work from home. So that is a bit different for me. But a lot of people don't work from home. They are already out. Their days are already busy. Can you do something for 15 minutes? It doesn't have to be 3 hours.
And well, I always say everything counts. Everything. It doesn't matter if you do 5, 10, 15 minutes, count it, make it like part of your success for the day. I think it's really important. You don't have to go and do 40 minutes to an hour. I had an experience the other day that, like, it still makes me laugh. I was in the gym, I was doing my program, and a woman came in and she stood behind me slightly off to the side. And everything I did when I looked over, she literally did my workout. I've never experienced this before. It was really weird. She literally did my workout. And at first I was a bit pissed off, thinking, come on, lady, this is too weird. People can see you copying me. Stop doing it. But then by the time, I'm glad I didn't react, because, you know, that's my first go too. But I sat and thought about it. I thought, I wonder if she just doesn't know what she's doing. Yeah. And I wonder if she just really needs help. And in the end, I felt like going over and writing her a program, but I didn't do that either. But still, I got inside her head and just thought, good for you. You came and you copied my workout, but at least you did something. And I was quite proud of her. Anyway, I've never seen her since, because otherwise I think I might help her out. And then in regard to the movement thing as well, you've got the move with intention, and we talk about NEAT being super important for our overall well-being, this non-exercise activity thermogenesis, the movement outside of the gym.
Yes.
And we are a sedentary nation. Even those that go to the gym, even if you do your 45 minutes, we tend to then go home and sit down. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to do that.
Yeah, it really is.
So how do you encourage that? How do you encourage the intentional movement of just getting outside and walking and stuff?
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be a little bit dependent on where you live. Do you live in a place where, you know, weather is really not on your side? Do you live in a place where it's not safe to walk around? I mean, there's just a lot of things to consider, but I think looking for opportunities in your day to just get up, if you are working outside the home, can you set an alarm until you develop that sort of that habit of getting up every 30 minutes and even just stretching and moving your body, like stretch your neck, roll, you know, roll your shoulders out. We get so hunched over. Can we just low key really move around? If we have a job where we are more sedentary, can we use some of the break time that we get to go do a short walk or go walk around the building or go get some fresh air, just get outside? I mean, so many different ways that we can do this really low key.
Yeah.
I give an example in the book, which actually came from, I think, one of my clients in real life, but she figured out that she was living, you know, working in downtown Chicago. She would take a train to a bus or a bus to a train and then walk a short distance to her office. Instead, she decided to get off the bus or the train one stop sooner and walk the whole way. And she actually figured out she got to work faster.
Ironically, isn't that?
Yes,
funny?
Ironically. Yeah. And she was getting an extra 30 minutes of movement a day because she was walking for 15 minutes in each direction.
I know, right, I've done it in my community as well. I've done something similar where I've just like created like a little like challenge, like it's a challenge. Let's see who can do the most steps today. And oh my God, these women were so crazy. Like they were literally doing that, getting off the subway stop earlier or like doing extra stairs and stuff because they were so determined to win. It was probably like a baseball cap they were getting. It was something nothing. But the idea that that was like something that they could do very easily, they were so creative. And I just think that, like, I love these, like the Fitbit challenges that families do together, you know, like aunts and cousins and uncles are like trying to beat each other and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a very like fun way to bring some like non-aggressive, like sort of like stimulus into your life, you know, just to get people moving more. So.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm really glad. Okay, so I think that that's a really great place to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi guys, Amanda here. I'm just jumping in to ask you a quick favor. If you are enjoying my podcast, then I'd love you to leave me a review on either iTunes or Google Play. It helps me get in front of new listeners so I can keep making great content for you. And in return, I'd like to send you my Abs on Fire 12-week core-focused workout plan. All you need to do after you've done your review is simply email me at amanda@fitandchips.com and I'll send you the program straight away. Thanks, guys, for all your support. And now, back to the show.
Okay, Steph, so now let's move on to part three, which is recharge your energy. So what's that about? What's that whole section about?
Yeah, it was really inspired by the work of Tony Schwartz in thinking about broadening my own approach to energy and how I talk about this with the people in my community and my clients. And I think most people would recognize sleep is an important component of healthier lifestyle, feeling better in your body. And yet, even if we're sleeping 8 hours, that's only one third of our day.
Yeah.
What's going on in the other two thirds of our day? You know, and part of this is kind of a mindset stress management thing. And part of it is just looking for opportunities to give our brain a break because we're constantly on. I mean, you name it, work, social media, being online. I mean, we're just bombarded 24/7 with, well, or eight, I guess 16/7 with information, with trying to be more and more productive by multitasking. And these are some of the things I talk about in the book. We know multitasking is just, there are so many studies where it's just the worst for productivity. It's the worst, but yet we do it because it's sort of the default. So, are there ways to adjust your own workflow during the day? And I get that this is going to be very situational dependent to the type of work people do, to the constraints that they're under. But I'm always looking for, is there a way we can do just a little bit better with what we have and what we're working with? So looking for those opportunities, I think one of the biggest ones is understanding that. And I think a lot of people get this. They're like, I know that sleep cycles are a thing, right? We don't go through the same depth of sleep all night long.
Yeah.
Right? We are cycling in and out of these different levels of sleep. Well, we also have cycles that occur during the day.
I love this part of the book, actually. I'd never heard the term before.
Right. So and we have circadian rhythm, which is our 24-hour kind of biological clock, which a lot of people have heard of too. But the concept that people haven't really heard of often is called ultradian rhythm. Okay.
I was waiting for you to say it, because I was like, I'm going to say it wrong.
Ultradian. So it looks like ultra and then D-I-A-N. So ultradian rhythms, really, it's this idea that we have cycles when we're awake, similar to, and obviously we're not sleeping when we're doing this, but they're similar to the, in concept, to sleep cycles, where, you know, we do have peaks of energy and troughs of energy. Now, some of that can be exacerbated, I think, by things like nutrition. So if we're, you know, really eating a lot of refined sugar and we just are borderline hypoglycemic, we can really feel pretty awful in the early afternoon, especially because we're tired. There's a lot going on there, but we do have these natural ebbs and flows. And so one of the things we talk about in the book is working with this idea that if we can focus our attention for a short period of time and then take a break, we oftentimes end the day getting more done and feeling less crappy, frankly, because we're giving ourselves time, especially if we have a mentally demanding job. We are in an office, we're in a cube, we're doing something like me, which is where I'm, you know, writing online or recording a podcast. I'm thinking all day long. And we have this really interesting belief that the longer we can just do the thing, we're going to get more done. And that is not the case. Many Scandinavian countries have begun to realize this, that the longer they make their employees work straight through, the longer the workday, the productivity does not go up. And so in some of the Scandinavian countries, I think particularly Sweden, they've shortened the workday.
I love Scandinavians for everything.
I know.
Cool. And I mean, I know. Everything.
They are on it.
They're always on everything. Yeah. But yeah. And I like, I know that like in my son's school, they've started introduce the Tony Schwartz's method into the study practice. But it's really cool. I'd heard of him through my son.
Oh, neat.
Because they've told the kids to go home and only like study for like 90 minutes.
Yes.
And then take a 30 minute break to physically come downstairs, see their parents, grab a bite to eat, walk around, take a few deep breaths. And mm-hmm. I was like, it's really quite cool. And my husband's like, I don't think so. I used to study 12 hours long and I never got up from the bedroom floor. My son's like, no, we have the studies to prove that you're wrong. So that was an interesting conversation. But we know it to be true though, right? We know that it's important.
Yes, giving yourself that break. And again, it's not always possible to do a 30-minute break. I understand that. But what I think we could challenge folks to do is say, on my break, am I, you know, and I have a mentally demanding job where I'm on the computer all day, am I then sitting down and reading email or on social media? And this is one of my biggest challenges, Amanda. I'm going to be super honest with you, because I will oftentimes sit there and just, you know, I'm like, I'm taking a break. And then I'm like getting on. And I'm like, no, that's not rejuvenating, relaxing, restorative for me. So I could go and pop in. I have this really amazing like sound bath meditation off YouTube that I love. It's 15 minutes long. I can pop that in. I go outside in the garden and putter around. I'll go put dishes away. Obviously I work at home, but you can create analogies to your workday. Go sit outside on a bench, go have your lunch, do a bit of a walk, go do a little bit of a workout. I mean, there's so many different things that you can incorporate just to give your brain a chance to relax.
And you know what? That ties in really well with my friend wrote a book called The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg. And and so he writes in that book about the muffin time. Remember the muffin time of the day? And it was essentially the same thing. And he ties it in also with our inability to lose weight, because it's when we do the mindless eating, because we create these habits where, you know, we don't actually truly pull away and we end up munching on food, scrolling on social media and not being completely honest with ourselves. And I actually really like the idea of like making a purposeful break. Mm-hmm. I do the same thing. I'll start doing something, then I'll feel my old squirrely brain kicking and going down another little path and go, Jesus, what was I doing before? And so I feel like that's probably one of my biggest Achilles heel is probably that too. Mm-hmm. But I've seen it work for my son. I've seen him be able to really focus, and especially with the amount of ADHD that's going on at the moment, like kids being unable to like find a place to like, you know, focus. I think it could be a really productive way to get through the day.
Yeah. There's this really interesting concept called switching cost, where the more often you are switching your task, you cannot settle in. And, you know, as a teacher, I would see this often in school, like it really takes you a good 15 minutes at least, if not more, to really descend into this flow state, this idea of focused attention, where you really can problem solve. But when we're constantly, you know, like it's like switching through the browser tabs. We're like browser tab, hopping around. That switching cost rather is so high. We can't ever really settle in. So when I sit down and I'm like, I really got to get this done. I have some things I do. I put on my headphones. I have an app on my computer called Self Control, where I literally block myself from Twitter and Facebook for a predetermined amount of time. And I set the timer on my phone. And that's that. And when the timer goes off, I get up and I take a break.
And it's interesting because like social media can wait for you. Nothing's pressing. No one's going to die if you don't go on in 90 minutes. Like it's really one of the things I've like trained myself to do because it was just becoming, I realized it was actually a horrible habit, but I would wake up with my alarm and I'd press dismiss on my alarm, which is on my phone because my phone turns itself off overnight. I've set that up and that's great. But then I'd just go and quickly open Facebook and quickly open Instagram thinking I better just check. And later I was like, why do I better just check why do I think it's so important? And so now I don't even look at it at all until I've had breakfast and I've had my coffee and I've took the kids to school and then I open it up and have a look. And I think that was really hard to do. It was like literally losing an arm. It was like, but that's the state we're in as a nation, right? That's where we've landed.
Yeah.
We're addicted to it and it's not. It's just not a healthy place to be. And so how does it work then? Is it just 90 minutes working and 30 minutes off? Is that the recommendation?
Yeah. And if you're familiar with the Pomodoro method, it's somewhat similar to that. So what I do is I actually will set my alarm for 30 minutes. And sometimes I'll take like a 5-minute break if I need to go to the bathroom or I just get up and stretch my body, right? We were talking about that earlier. Because for me, sitting for 90 minutes in a row, my body feels like garbage afterwards.
Yeah.
So, you know, take a 5-minute break and then get back to it. And then at the end of that 30 minutes, I try to go do something completely unrelated to my computer or my phone. It depends on the workday, but I might do 3 of those or 4 of those in the day. It depends on what other work I have to do. But I try to do that as much as possible. I am not perfect with it. It is, you know, it's not something I have mastered, but I noticed so much that on the days I do that, I end up at the end of the day, I'm not like, wow, I was busy all day. I feel like I got nothing done.
I hate those feelings as well because it just leaves a sense of like really disappointment in yourself. And there's nothing worse than disappointment. Is that like, it's just, I've had those days where I've like, I've actually done nothing. I've just fucked around all day and like really not achieved anything. And so I've got to the point now where I have like my top three. I get them done. I just want my top three. It doesn't matter whether they're work related, family related, you know, around the house. It doesn't matter. I think that that's enough for me. And I think it's very good as you get older as well to like, especially like the menopausal crowd, you know, we have this like really hard one, like self experience that we have where we realize all of that peripheral stuff, all that fluff can just disappear, right? We just don't need it. And it really gets us down to the things that matter. And I think I'm good now at focusing on those things that matter. And then if I get this small stuff done afterwards, then I'm like a rock star. I could do anything. But mostly if I get 3 things done a day, I'm like, okay, that's great. And I've seen this actually translate into the workplace as well. I mean, I have a client that has a very, very stressful job and she's been able to sort of pare back as well. And it doesn't mean she does less. She just has just completely strategized the way she does her day to the point where, you know, she has these big rocks that she's going to move and she focuses on them. And usually the other stuff happens organically afterwards, right?
Yeah. An endless to-do list is not... for me is like the fastest way to stress me out, where you have like 50 things on your to-do list. I hate lists as it is. This is just my personality and how I operate in the world. So if I do write stuff down because it really has to get done, it is like 3 things and that's it. And I know I'm going to get those done that day. And that's a visual reminder to me, but having, you know, 20 things on a to-do list, absolutely not.
I have to write it down, otherwise I just forget. that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
So let's, I know there's a ton more in the recharge energy. I know there's a ton more to do with sleep and all of that. But I really want to move on to the last element, which is empowering your mind, because I think that this is one of the things that really isn't focused on enough. I know it's important, especially when we have clients and we speak to them. We realize that women need to build resiliency as they age. It can be such a stressful time for us when we see ourselves getting older and maybe feeling less competent, and we lose a little bit of belief in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you approach this
section? Yeah. Mindset is so important and yet so tough. And I'll just say, I'm not a psychologist and I'm not a mindset expert per se, but I am somebody who works with people. And I think you have to understand mindset if you're going to work with people. And overcoming my own negative mindset, my own predominant self-limiting beliefs. I mean, I still have doubts about myself. I am not in this perpetual state of like, I'm great, everything's perfect. So this is always going to be something that it's just part of the human experience and part of my own experience as well.
Exactly. Nobody's ever, and if they're on all the time, then great for them. But that's not typical at all, right?
No.
It's really okay to feel flat and down on yourself occasionally, because it's a good way to turn it around, right?
For sure. And I think there's a little bit of a danger with the sort of good vibes only mentality, where we're like, oh, it's only ever good vibes or happy feelings. All feelings are valid feelings. All feelings are good. I hate to use the word good, but like all feelings have a place.
Feelings matter. I agree. Yeah.
And in the range of a human experience, and to try to deny that makes us do things like, you know, stuff things down and not deal with it. So I think for me, the really important thing that I want to get across in this section is a couple big things. One is figuring out what's important to you. And I know that this often changes over our lifetime, right? Especially as we age, if we do have children, maybe they've grown up and left the house, or they're not as young anymore and they don't need us as much as they did before. And we find our roles changing, whether we are parents or not. We find ourselves going through different seasons of life. And yet so many of us are still holding on to the values that were important to us when we were 20. And life has changed and we're still operating from that point of view. And so we feel this dissonance, but we don't really know what it is. So finding some clarity around what's important to us is really huge when it comes to mindset. Also looking at things like your self-limiting beliefs and fear, and cultivating some sort of mindfulness and awareness, I think is a huge first step for people. And, you know, really looking at mindfulness and awareness is this idea of non-judgment. And this is a very kind of like Buddhist principle, but I think we can expand that to, I think there's value in it, regardless of if you are spiritual or religious or not, is that there's something really valuable about being able to observe your own thinking from a place of like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I wonder what triggered that in me. And being able to look at that objectively, not saying, hey, I don't want to ever have any negative thoughts ever again, because that's not going to happen. Thoughts come into our consciousness all the time, that they're just there. And how we react to that is really important. So
that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do we do with those thoughts? We have a lot of women and men will have these thoughts where they would never speak that to anybody else. It would be so harmful, but they do it to themselves all the time. So yeah, they've had this wrong thought. Then what do you do with it? Like, how do I move on from this?
For sure. So I call it kind of hooking in. Like, how much do we hook into the negative thought? Do I just like hook in and go for a ride? And now it would happen to me all the time. I mean, all the time, where I would have this negative thought, maybe about my body or about myself and how good I was. And 3 hours later, I would find myself, I'd like kind of wake up and I'd be on the couch. You know, I had been crying for 3 hours and thinking that my life was an absolute wreck. And, you know, I really let myself get away from myself. And so in the book, I talk about this idea of stopping the brain drain. The brain drain to me is that ride you take yourself on, where 3 hours later, you've gone down this pity party hole that is so deep, you don't even realize it's happening. And so it's like, can we stop and just like get into our bodies for a second? Because I know for me and a lot of people, like we we are in so much in our head, right? We're like all in our head all the time, thinking, analyzing all this stuff. And especially this idea of like feeling anxious or feeling scared, and just sort of getting into my body and stopping and saying, okay, actually right now I'm sitting in my living room talking to Amanda. Everything is totally fine. I'm not in any real danger. I'm in my body. Okay. So grounding yourself is really important. Breathing.
Especially if you've got anxiety, it's always good to bring things back to the present for sure, rather than like worrying about what's about to happen. Yeah,
for sure. Breathing. You know, when we get that stressed, we like get stressed out and things start to happen. Like, can we just come back to some parasympathetic breathing and breathe through our belly and not through our chest? And like, we're not triggering that fight or flight sympathetic response. And then I find, and this is what I teach in the book and what's really worked well for me, is then going and doing something with my, if I can do something with my hands, even better, chop vegetables, put away laundry, put away dishes, draw something, write in a journal. I mean, play music, like whatever you can do to just sort of like get your hands going, because it's easier to bring the focus back to that rather than to be all up in your head. So that's one of the things I talk about in the book. And I think that's part stress related and how we manage stress and a little bit of mindset too. So, I mean, there are so many different things that encompass mindset, but I think.
I really agree with that. It's a massive, massive topic. And I know that there's experts out there. One of the things I read in the book that I really believe in myself and I do is like trying to work out what your core values and strengths are. It's like something that people can just go online and do. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting when you do these like quizzes and you actually see what your core values are, like what you've answered to determine the things that drive you every day. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you have them, then you can make decisions based around what your values are. And it's actually a really eye-opening experience. I personally think it's one of the true ways you can build resiliency as you sort of edge and move forward, like knowing, you know, everything that you're doing right now supports your beliefs. It supports like your journey, your family, your career, and all of those things. And I think it's a really powerful tool. You do touch on that in the book a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, there's a values assessment. Again, to get clear about what matters to you right now. I think especially for women, the tendency is often to take on too much, to say yes to too many things, to not have boundaries. And that leads to feelings of overwhelm. And I mean, just like the fuck it all, like this is too much, you know, feeling like we're doing everything for everybody else and nothing for ourselves. I think there's a balance to be struck there. And I think we can't just always only focus on us. But if we're not in a place where we're feeling good and we're putting too much energy outside of ourselves, it's no wonder we feel terrible. So I think looking at that sort of stuff, looking at your values, what's important to you right now, so that you're able to set boundaries, you're able to say no more and understand why you're saying no. If one of my core values is, you know, time to myself or time alone or whatever I want to say, then if I consistently am choosing to, you know, be the one who volunteers for everything, for example, because I'm afraid people aren't going to like me if I say no, then that's not honoring that value about myself.
Did you just describe me then?
No, I describe myself. That's like, I require a lot of alone time just because of who I am. And if I feel like I'm stretched too thin, I just get frantic. It's too much.
You just get overwhelmed. Yeah, I hear that all the time with women. And then what happens as well is a lot of women then go into the perimenopausal women will go into that time of their life already stretched really thin, with the inability to cope with stress as much because of the fluctuating hormones, and they have no boundaries whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I feel as though already getting ahead of the game with that, like really setting your stall out so you really believe in you know, what you're doing and it's for the right reasons is, I think it's actually a gift and it can sort of like trickle out to other people around you. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's one of those things that you can do just to create quite a lot of harmony in your life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Jen, tell me, Jen, that's where I got Jen from. You know, I'm just looking, sorry, I'm looking at the name Steph Godreau on the book as well. I blame the menopause for that.
No worries.
So Steph, tell me about the book, like when it's going to come out and where people can find it and where they can find you.
Yeah, the book's the core four, Embrace Your Body, Own Your Power. Really want to set up this idea of the core four pillars with the intention that, you know, you can look at nutrition and fitness and all this stuff and have it be for restrictive purposes and exercise as punishment and all the things that we kind of know are what people do. Mm-hmm. But can we approach this in a way that we have compassion for ourselves? We want to realize that we don't need to be filled with empowerment. We already have power. We are amazing, capable, fantastic beings, and we are already worthy. So the whole reason for using the core four is to live more into that. It's not to have the perfect body. It's not to like have the lowest weight on the scale that you've ever seen. It's really to own this idea that you are powerful. You deserve to take up space. You deserve to live a big life, the life that you want to live for yourself. And also the first sentence of the book really sums up the idea that there's this vision that I have that I really want us to work together as a community and like a global community on, which is girls that grow up into be women who know their worth, take up space and all this stuff without using the scale and diets, restrictive diets for our whole lives and exercise as punishment. And it's really interesting because I think we need to do this together. We need women of all ages, but in particular, this book is really for women who are in middle age. I'm 40, you know, I get it. I am here with women who are walking this path, and we need all of us. And there's some really interesting and frankly heartbreaking data about women and their body image in their 50s and 60s and 70s and beyond, that this is not a problem. This is not just a problem that young women, teens, and girls face. That women of all ages are getting into their later years and are still plagued by feelings of not being enough.
There's no way to live.
What a tragedy.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You know, to get to the end of life or your later years and think that that's the most important thing you can give to society is a perfect body, or, oh gosh, it just makes me so sad. So that's really why I wrote the book. The book will be out on July 30th. And you can find it at core4thebook.com or anywhere that you can buy books online or in retail. And I'm at stephgodreau.com.
I'll make sure everything's in the show notes for this. And like Steph's like reminded everyone, it's time to take our power back. I think that's a really great message to end on. And I thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been really, really fun and such a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Bye everyone for now. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on my services, head over to my website at fitandchips.com. That's like fish and chips, fitnchips.com. Or you can head over to my Fit and Chips Facebook page too. If you leave me a comment or if you contact me, I promise I'll do my best to respond to all of your questions. The views and advice expressed by myself in this show are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always go straight to your doctor. Take care. Love you. Bye.